This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Media Splode. Fanboy Media Splode, the first episode of our all-media monthly show that was unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, Connor Kilpatrick.
And Ron Richards.
How could I miss this? I couldn't.
This has been a stretch goal for a long time, unlock the monthly Media Splode, and this is a special circumstance. We had a crazy and crazy awesome patron who unlocked the eccentric benefactor level.
It was indeed an eccentric benefactor.
And by doing so, he's going to guest star on our regular weekly Pick the Week podcast, but also in doing so, unlocked the at least one episode of the Media Splode show. So hopefully you like what you hear, and if you do, you'll join up to patreon.com/ifanboy, because this is the only episode, unless things change next month, because we'll go back down to normal.
So they got to get the Patreon pledges up over $3,000 per month, right, to unlock this, to keep it unlocked.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. So it's not far off.
No.
It's been dangling there for a while. It just needed a push off the cliff, so to speak.
Correct. So if you wanted to add more work to our already busy lives, this is how you do it. And we're excited to talk about media. This is a monthly version of our very popular end of the year all media show, in which we talked about things that aren't comics, TV and movie and music and books and things. And it just so happens that this show was unlocked during a time in which there are no films being released. TV is up in the air and there's no shows to go to. It's a very strange time for media is what I'm saying, because of what's going on with the coronavirus. So strange timing indeed, as we try to figure out what we're going to talk about in the show. But what this did tell us was, hey, many people are home. Many jobs are saying work from home. You're home now. And we know that you're, quote, working from home and definitely not watching things on streaming. And we figured we'd start the show off by recommending some things to watch. Let's say you're home and you need something in the background while you're working, or you definitely need to pay attention to your job, but you also have things in the background. What can we recommend to those listening at home who haven't a lot of experience working from home? What can we recommend to those who watch from home?
I was just saying earlier today that, you know, what's going on in the world is, you know, concerning and horrible and difficult and all stuff like that. But man, of all the times in history for it to happen,
sure,
when there is so much media that can come into your household with a click of a button, you know, like even if this happened 20 years ago, we would be frantically, like everyone was buying toilet paper, we'd be frantically running to Best Buy to buy DVDs.
10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
10
yeah.
years ago, you had some of it, but not nearly this much. 15 years ago, for sure. You'd have to, you know, you'd burning through your DVD collection, but now you have an endless variety of things to watch. And as all of us have worked from home. Josh has been working from home for 12 years now. I worked from home for a good 5 years straight. We all have experience doing so. Josh, let's start with you. Yeah. What can you recommend the listeners? And they are listeners.
They are listeners.
What can they watch while they're home on their various streaming services?
Now, this is going to be a very Josh-centric thing, although you would both find interest in this. I like to go big. I like to say, like, what's the longest I can sort of get into something and stick to it? Mm-hmm. And I watched on Amazon Prime the American Experience PBS series New York City, New York, by Rick Burns, the younger brother of Ken Burns. But if you change the name, for all intents and purposes, to Ken Burns-type documentary in New York City, I believe it is somewhere around 22 to 23 hours. And it gives you the history of the city from its sort of earliest inception up through after 9/11, because there's one episode that they brought out, like with the baseball series, they brought it out sort of after the doping scandals, and sure, they sort of added one more. So they did a long, like a 2-hour episode on the World Trade Center in general. Like, most of it was, you know, the sort of conception, the struggle to get it made and what people thought of it. And then, you know, through the attacks and through the aftermath and everything, which was fascinating on its own. But the rest of it, you know, takes you to the earliest history of the city with, like, sort of this, you know, all that stuff is amazing archive in terms of art and then photos and then footage and things like that. I learned, you know, like, there's a lot of those names that you see around the city. And I don't know, Connor, you grew up there, so you probably got a lot more education in this. But, like, I didn't know who DeWitt Clinton was. Mm. I didn't know, you know, who Peter Stuyvesant was. I didn't know all that stuff.
The Schermerhorns.
Yeah, the Schermerhorns. Yep. It was a really great look at just how the city was and what it became and why.
Two questions for you.
Yeah.
How long did they spend on Bill the Butcher?
Not terribly long. In fact, my guess
was not long enough.
I mean, anything would have been not long enough, but I don't think he was mentioned. They did spend a lot of time on talking about how unimaginably awful the slums were back then.
Yeah.
Like worse than any slums ever. And I don't think people have. It's really hard to picture it. If you're in Lower Manhattan now, it's hard to imagine, like, that was the worst place to live in the world.
How long is the whole series, like, total watch time?
22, 23 hours.
Wow. Okay. So that's a good chunk.
Each episode is, like, you know, a hair under 2 hours, I think. And I want to say there's 9 or 10 of them.
Okay. So sell this to someone who hasn't grown up in New York, hasn't lived in New York, doesn't know why they need to know about New York. Why should they watch this series?
It's a fascinating historical document of just sort of seeing how things used to be. I mean, I'm sure I think one of the most fascinating things, one that I keep coming back to, is they talked about how building of the Empire State Building started right when the stock market crashed, and, you know, everyone was scrambling for work or doing whatever, and they put up that building from soup to nuts in like 13 months,
which is crazy considering New York construction.
Yeah, they were doing a floor a day, and, you know, they were trying to get it done, and there's this amazing footage. So the riveters, guys who were putting all the beams together, they worked in 4-man teams, and if one guy was sick, the whole team couldn't work. So, like, they had to go. And there's this footage of, like, the one guy roasting the rivet, you know, in, like, his charcoal fire, mm-hmm, with these two pincers. And he just turns and flings it. Red hot piece of metal, 1,000 feet in the air, and flings it over to another guy who just sort of catches it with a metal funnel thing he has. And then they put it, you know, like, into the building. They go, and they would just do this, like, musically sing song over and over, you know, for days. There were something like, I think there were only 5 deaths, you know. And also, like, you can see the footage, but it's hard to comprehend that under them is just
people,
air. No, like, you're standing up there. That's one thing. I was like, I can't stand on a ledge, you know, like, and they're just standing up there. And yes, there's people. So they drop a rivet. It's going to melt straight through their head.
Everyone's seen the photos of those guys eating lunch on the beams, you know, the famous photos.
Watching them move, though, is a whole
other
thing.
I can already feel my scrotal area tensing up. Because Josh and I used to work in the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We worked on the 73rd floor, and just being that high up and looking out the window would cause
fun fact about that, in your office, there were no, you could open the windows and just lean out.
Yes. No screens, no guards.
Which I did several times, and I made it about maybe a third of my body out the window before I couldn't go any further.
No, it's absurd.
And if you left, like also to understand, like, if you left the window open a crack, you got there in the morning, there was not a paper in place. Like, the entire place would be shambles. And you think about standing up there, having lunch. Anyway, like, that's one tiny part. You know, they talk a lot about how you know, it's the capital of America for many, many, many ways. And they talk about why, and it's all super interesting. They talk about, you know, after the war, what happened, then after, you know, in the 70s, what happened, and a lot of Robert Moses.
Excellent.
It was really.
Or not enough Robert Moses.
No, there was
never enough.
We've had a lot. The city has definitely had too much Robert Moses. He might have wanted to stop after the Triborough.
So that's on Amazon Prime.
Yep. Yeah. It might be on if you're PBS. It might be on the PBS app if you're a member.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend on Netflix, Love is Blind. No, don't watch that unless you hate yourself.
Why?
The Repair Shop, which is a series that originated in England on BBC Two. It's recently moved to BBC One. It started as a daytime show. Now it's moving to primetime. It's on its fifth season in England, but there are two seasons available on Netflix, which is about 30 episodes, so about 30 hours. And it's the perfect show to watch in the background while you're working. Whereas, I'm not going to denigrate Josh's choice, but you really probably want to pay attention to that show. For The Repair Shop, you can have it on in the background, you can do your work, but you can also, you know, check in when things get exciting. And it's a show about these adorable British artisans in this barn somewhere in England who repair people's items, their family heirlooms, their antiques. They bring them back to their original luster. It's a reality show where, you know, they do three items a show, and some adorable old English couple shows up with their old clock and it gets fixed, and they tell a story about their clock and how their family got it, and their grandfather made the clock and he was blind, and you cry and everyone cries, and then they fix it and everyone cries again. It's wonderful. I recently found this show and watched the two seasons available in the space of about 2 days. I couldn't stop watching it. It fills my need to watch people tinker with things. There's a woodworking guy, there's a clock guy, there's a upholstery guy, and they bring in specialty people for like old gramophones or old pinball machines, Ron. There's a whole team that does old teddy bears and stuffed animals, and they fix people's things. And because it's England, there's a long history, so this woman brings in her teddy bear that she had when she was a child through the Blitz, and it was the only thing she kept from the Blitz, and it kept her, you know, happy while they were bombing. And then now she's 80 and it's falling apart, so they fix it, and she's presented with it, and she starts crying because it's the thing from the 40s. And
like Mr. Burns' bear.
Exactly. And it's very heartwarming, but it's full of interesting. If you're someone like me who's into fixing things and into, you know, woodwork and that kind of thing, it's also got a lot of that. I'm hoping that the next three seasons, which have come out in England, but not here, will end up on Netflix soon. And if you watch it, if you've seen it, you'll know why I have a photo of Steve, the clockmaker, on my desktop background.
Oh.
Because he's awesome. He seems like the nicest man in the world. The Repair Shop, it's great for the kind of TV show you need in the background while you're working from home.
Ron, you better come with some fiction.
I was going to say, you guys are really, I mean, like, we went into this with very little prep, but we didn't talk about what we were going to recommend before. And you guys went in very different directions. And before I get to kind of my pick and my recommendation, I will throw out a couple of tools that you could use for planning your binge watching and your streaming. There's a great website that an app that both I know Josh and I use. I don't know if Connor uses, but it's called Just Watch.
Oh,
I have it bookmarked on my bar.
Yeah,
here.
Just Watch is basically your tool to find out where anything and everything is streaming. You think of any TV show or movie, it'll show you on all the different platforms that is available. You can filter the platforms that you subscribe to or that you use. It makes it really easy to find things. So Just Watch is a must have. And then as I was researching this, I discovered the website called BingeClock.com. Which actually has a database of every TV show, and it calculates the runtime of episodes to tell you how long it would take to watch through everything. Let's just say I was going to recommend HGTV's House Hunters. It would take you 13 days and 14 hours to get through every episode of House Hunters.
That's it?
That's it. Well, that's 24 hours straight.
It feels like
it
should be more than that.
Yeah, no, it is actually the 277th longest binge watch. I will give you each a chance to guess. What do you think is the longest binge watch according to BingeClock.com?
Gunsmoke.
Okay.
That's something.
Law and Order SVU.
USA still hasn't gotten through it. I don't know. I'm having a hard time blanking. Like a soap opera of some kind, like
Josh.
General
ding
Hospital?
Ding ding. A Guiding Light.
Yeah, okay. Oh.
It would be 591 days and 1 hour to get through every episode of Guiding Light.
Are those available to do
I don't
that?
Think so. The binge okay. clock does the binge clock does not worry about
it. It might be on CBS All Access.
It might be, actually.
It's,
I don't know
it's
about
a CBS
all of them,
show.
Yeah.
I think it's a CBS show.
So in terms of what my recommendations and all this stuff, at first I was like, oh, well, you know, like Twin Peaks is a great one if you've never watched, and selfishly, you know, it's a favorite of ours and that sort of thing. And, you know, you could super get into that, but I'm not gonna recommend that. We just did the iFanboy patron hangout. We're talking about Picard, and, you know, there are so many seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation or Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can get lost in Star Trek. But actually, you know, I think you want to bring some levity and some, you know, kind of humor into the world. And I was looking for a show that there's actually will guarantee you enough laughs and give you enough to be on through to get you through the work days. And if you haven't gone down the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia rat hole, I strongly recommend that.
It's a really good suggestion.
The FX show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I believe there are 9 seasons.
I did that because I work at home. So I went through that. I binged that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that worked.
Basically, the way I like to describe it to people is that it's fucked up Seinfeld. Group of four friends, 3 guys, 1 girl. They run a bar in Philadelphia, and then Danny DeVito joins the cast in season 2. And it is some of the most creative and very consistently funny. I mean, you know, inappropriate, raw, you know, but like not brainless. But
coming from the
right place, exactly. Yeah, very clever, very Seinfeld-esque, clever plot directions and the way things tie and weave and ongoing jokes and things like that. It's really something you can get lost in. So I recommend It's Always
Sunny. Where is that streaming?
Probably on Hulu, I believe.
It is on Hulu right now.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. I'm sorry, it's got 14 seasons.
Yeah, they said they're not going to stop. They said they can keep going forever.
And so you can stream all 14 seasons on Hulu. You can buy them if you wanted to on Amazon and Google Play and Apple and all that fun stuff. Basically, Hulu's where you want to go for that one.
What's awesome about that show is, like, it's kind of a punk DIY show.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. They were just like, well, we can't get hired or anything we like, so let's make our own show. And, like, what a success.
Yeah, and I will give FX credit for supporting them for years, and I hope they never go away.
Yeah.
I've seen Dennis at my gym many times.
Nice.
All those people were on ER at some point, too, before that.
Let's go back to 2012. I'm at Morrison Con, a little show that Ron put on in Las Vegas celebrating Grant Morrison.
It was a fun time. Nearly died.
I was at a panel, watching a panel. I think it was the writer's panel, and they were discussing the books that they really liked reading. And Jonathan Hickman, one of the guests of the show, mentioned he just read a book called Leviathan's Wake, and he really liked it, and he recommended it to everybody. And so then about a month later, I was randomly at a bookstore in Los Angeles for an event, for a book reading, and I was wandering around the store before the reading, killing time, and I saw they had a display with Leviathan's Wake and the next 2 chapters, which was Caliban's War and Abaddon's Gate, and I said, oh, that was that book Hickman recommended. I should pick that up. Oh, they have all 3 of the trilogy here. I'll get them. And I bought them. They sat on my shelf for, I think, a year, along with my other to read books, and I finally got to read them. They were the first 3 chapters of the Expanse series, the 9 books series from the pen name James S. A. Corey. And I told Ron about them because he's also a sci-fi fan. I said, you got to read these books. They're terrific.
Well, so I don't remember what year it was, but you bought me the first one.
I think probably for Christmas, yeah.
And I don't know if I read it immediately, but once I started reading it, I could not put it down. And then, you know, basically they have James S. A. Corey, which is the pen name of the writing duo of Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. And they have, like clockwork, put out a new book every year, with the exception of 2018. There was a gap between 2017 and 2019 when books came out. And I was actually had Daniel Abraham on my Twin Peaks podcast, Dan Fine podcast. We had him on as a guest, and we got to chat with him a little bit about that, and he was awesome. But yeah, Connor, I'm right there with you. Got sucked into this. The Expanse really scratched a realistic sci-fi itch, the kind of books that I'd liked that I hadn't read in a while, and it really just nailed it.
So Ron and I have been reading these books for about 7 years, give or take. Been 7 years. We're the 8th book is out right now. I'm in the middle of the 8th book. I'm about 4/5 of the way through the 8th book. The 9th and final book comes out at some point. They haven't announced the date yet. And so Ron and I have been faithfully reading these books for 7 years. And then Josh comes along recently and goes, hey guys, what should I read? We sort of jokingly said The Expanse. And then he read them all.
Not only did he read them all,
but he's passed us.
No, Josh, did you? Yes, he's passed us because I have not finished Tim Atzerath, the 8th book. But Josh, did you start watching the show first or read the book first?
So before I get into that, I do have a question.
Yes.
And I know that I am a finicky person, but like, did you tell me to read this at the time? Or did you?
I don't think I did because I don't think of you as someone who reads sci-fi books. You know what I mean?
He quietly judges you, Josh.
We all have our Venn diagrams, the three of us, and we all overlap in certain ways. And I know, like, if I read a really cool history book, I'm going to tell Josh about it, but not Ron.
Right.
If I read a really cool sci-fi book, I'm going to tell Ron about it, but not Josh, because I don't think of you as someone who reads a lot of sci-fi. And I could be wrong about that. It just could be we never talked about it. Ron and I have talked about Asimov and talked about Heinlein and a lot of books we've read as kids, sci-fi books. Mm-hmm. Growing up, watched Star Trek as kids, and that was something...
Ender's Game.
Yeah, something you weren't
I've
into.
Actually read all those books, though.
Right, but we just never talked about it, so it wasn't in my head to recommend to you
That's
sci-fi
fine.
Books.
That's fair. I'm not offended. I just thought, was it a conscious decision to be like, oh, he won't like this?
No, no, it's just like I don't recommend Ron history books like I talked to you about.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, but basically, I got this dog, and I was walking hours a day, and I have like an Audible subscription, and normally what I do is I find like the longest history book I can, and I get them one at a time until I finish it, like on my road bike or whatever. But I was going through them real fast, and so I asked for a book, and Connor's like, why don't you get that one? And I went, all right, you know, because I know you guys were talking about it. And
I
the
don't
thing
know
that
why
I
recommend it to you. I really don't know why.
I just remember that, like, when you guys were talking about it on the year-end media show, like, it was... You were into it.
Yeah.
Like, it was like that addiction thing. And I was like, that, you know, maybe that'll happen. And pretty quick, I was into it. You know, it's like when you start out a book, you know, like, you don't really know what world you're entering. And I got to the end. It was first, I thought, why does Ron like this? Because the first book is a little like a police procedural. It's kind of a murder story, cop story. And then all the other books tend to take different genres. There's a Western one. Then it's just fucking batshit. And no, I did not watch the TV show. Although after the first book, I was really curious to see, because you guys liked the show too. And I was like, I want to know what that's like. But I wanted to make sure that I did not go past what I had read, because I didn't want to spoil the books, because books are better than TV. They are. You know, in terms of long form storytelling and really get into it, I don't want not even to be spoiled. I don't want to be influenced. So when I watched the show.
Well, hold on. Let's pause for a second. So The Expanse is a TV show, but it's also the name of a book series. Mm-hmm. And the basic premise of the book series and the show is that in the future, you have the human race has expanded beyond Earth. There's a faction of the human race living on Mars. And there's a faction of the human race living within the asteroid belt. They're called Belters. And they've grown up living in a zero-G of the belt, mining the various asteroids in the asteroid belt. And so you've got these three factions. You've got the Earthlings, you've got Martians, and you have Belters.
And it's a class. I mean,
in the beginning of the series is about the tension between those three groups. And then in the first book, there's a mystery, a murder mystery. You follow a cop, played by Thomas Jane on the TV show. There's a bunch of main characters, but one of the characters is a cop who's investigating a murder while you also are following these guys on a ship. Mm-hmm. And by the time you get to the latest book, the stories have blown up to this whole geo is not even the right word. Galactic story about the human race, which has expanded into multiple planets, multiple galaxies, not galaxies, but multiple planets within the Milky Way because of this technology that's introduced in the first book. By the end, you've got sort of a Nazi thing going on. It has expanded beyond your wildest dreams once you read the first book. By the time when you read the first book and you look where it's gone, by the time you get to the eighth book, it's this giant world that's been built.
But it was built through those eight books. I mean, Expanse really does, when you think about the book series does expand, and it builds in a momentum through the eight books that is logical and easy to grasp and to follow. Like, that's the thing about it, is that, you know, like there's, you know, I kind of look at science fiction kind of falls in a few different kind of categories or genres, but like the science fiction that I always enjoyed the most, with the exception of Star Wars, which is more, you know, which is science fiction myth,
space opera,
but like, yeah, but the thing that I loved about Star Trek was that, oh, wow, this is a possible future. This is like, you know, like even the original Star Trek series had callbacks to our culture and our, you know, kind of thing like this. And The Expanse picks up on that thread where all of this is within our species' lifetime, you know, like where this is happening way in the future and they're still on Earth. And the same politics and the same kind of conflicts that we have on Earth spill out onto Mars, onto the you know, other moons and the belt and things like that, and then grows, you know, to this huge, you know, to the entire galaxy, thanks to some of the thing that happens in the book about halfway through, or earlier, a little like a third of the way through. It's graspable.
Yeah, but it's expansive. But I think the way that I've been describing it is like it's like Game of Thrones, but instead of fantasy, dragons, medieval, it's hard sci-fi. And then there are characters you actually like.
Correct.
Like, there are good people. Like, this, it's funny because I don't want to spoil things.
Don't.
There's two characters who get together, and it's way better after they do, and that doesn't usually happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like there's this theme of a bunch of characters have these really solid relationships with their significant other, and it's like absolute once they find it. And it's like in the midst of all this stuff, I find it super heartwarming. And like, the thing is, like, the main crew are these people, and once that crew gels, they're in it for each other.
Yep.
It's the classic crew on a ship. It's like it's like Firefly, you know, on it. So the main characters are the characters on the ship. There's also other characters that are that always orbit the story, but the main story is always thrust through this ship, the Rocinante, and the characters who man that ship. What was fun about the books is that, and this happened every time, every single book, was they would introduce new characters and I'd go, ugh, new character, I don't care.
I know,
and then by the end of the book, I'd be like, God damn it, I love that character. Why isn't there more of that character? It happened every single book. The book I'm reading now with Teresa, I'm like, who is, I'm like, Teresa's great. This character's awesome. It happened in every single book.
You know what trained me for that? And these actually remind me a lot of it, is the Zahn Star Wars books.
Hmm. Yes.
The Zahn Star Wars books would do that thing where they would show you somebody and you do this. And then by the end, you're like, I love them. And then the other thing that they would do is they'd have you in the basic way it's set up is that each chapter is from
a narrative point of view. Yeah.
Right.
One of James S. A. Corey, Ty Franek, was George R. R. Martin's assistant. Yeah. So I'm sure he learned the formula from Martin. And that was actually one of the selling points originally, was it's from the assistant of George R. R. Martin. It's written the same way as Game of Thrones. Each chapter is from the point of view of a different character. And that's how it's written.
Yep.
You'll get to the end of that segment. You'll be like, what? And then they'll switch to somebody else. And your first instinct is, what are you fucking? And then you get wrapped into that. And then they keep doing it over and over again. And everyone has had a satisfying ending. I can tell you that much. Like, every book stops at a point where you're like, okay, that wrapped that up. And then you do want to go to the next one. It's incredibly compelling.
And I can't think of anything that for 7 years where Ron and I have been like, oh my God, did you read that book? Can you believe what happened in that book? Oh my God. Like, you know, the last 3 or 4 books from the 8th, like 5 through 8, have been crazy in terms of major plot development happening. We're not going to spoil it, but like major things happening where I go to Ron like, oh my God, where are you in this book? Could you believe what happened? This thing's happened? Oh my God. And that's been happening for 7 years with Ron and I.
So, I've had to be very careful.
What was frustrating for me was that there were several books there in the middle that I was reading digitally the day they came out. And Connor, you read print editions, right? You read print
copies. I read the soft covers. So for the 9th book, I'm going to probably wait 2 years for the 9th book because
There was literally stuff that happened in books where I'm like, oh my God, I want to talk to you about this. And then so much time passed that by the time he read the book, I forgot and I had to go back and reread so that we could talk about it again. But still, they're chapters will happen. I'm like, oh my God, I just need to know what anybody else thinks of this because it blew me away for X, Y, and Z reasons and all that sort of stuff. They are very good at not really leaving cliffhangers, but doing it in a way to change the direction of the story in a way that is so, I don't want to say extreme, but just has consequences.
Yeah. There's huge consequences in this book. And there's one book in the middle where they totally go off the formula and like on a weird planet for a whole book. And that was great. Like, they found ways to tell different kind of stories within the construct of this world, which I think is the most compelling thing. And I can't think of another book other than when a Neal Stephenson book comes out where I drop whatever I'm reading to read the new one. This book goes to the top of my queue no matter what when it comes out.
And the problem, of course, is that now that I'm finished, like, where do you go? It's so hard to fill that niche, you know, where you're just like, I want something like that makes me feel like this when I'm reading it. That's really hard because you got to start over.
Well, because they haven't even announced the release of book 9 yet. And so who knows when that's... The publisher hasn't announced the release date. I don't know that it's done, but they said that they're waiting on the publisher to announce the release date. It's going to be a while. So you got obsessed with this, and then that spilled over to you watching the series, which began on Sci-Fi Network and then it was picked up by Amazon after it was canceled on Sci-Fi. I guess I watched all of the Sci-Fi. I haven't watched any of the Amazon seasons yet, but I only watched the Sci-Fi ones. What are your thoughts on the TV series?
Isn't only one of them Amazon?
I have no idea. I haven't watched
one season on Amazon. Season 4 is on Amazon. Yeah, season 1, 2, and 3 were Sci-Fi.
Which is the book you were just talking about on the planet. I think the show is generally good, but I say that through the lens of I actually tried to watch it a while back, and I was like, I don't know what this is, and I stopped. So I think with the context of, like, I want to see how they interpreted this other thing, I enjoyed it. Because it's easy to be like, oh, that's not right. Oh, that's really right. You know? But they're doing a lot with a little, clearly. You know what I mean? Like, I really like... I mean, the best part... Not the best part, but one of the sort of first parts that really got me is the very realistic space physics. Like,
yes.
I don't know if they did, but you really get the sense that they thought about how this would actually work in the real world, much like Andy Weir's The Martian.
It's the anti-Star Trek. There's no artificial gravity in your ships. There's none of that stuff.
It's ruined artificial gravity and other stuff for me. I'm like, that didn't work like that. You know, and I wanted to see how they did. I think they did, like, all the space stuff and the power armor and the sort of ships and how that all works. It's really fun to watch it get, you know, realized on the shows. You know, the casting is sort of all over the place in places because they would get big names and then shoehorn that person into a role that they're not really right for because they're, you know, trying to get people to watch it. So there's great actors. There's, you know, David Strathairn and
Thomas Jane.
Jared Harris. Thomas Jane is, I have nothing to complain about. Thomas Jane is fantastic.
Thomas Jane really sold it. I mean, it was, he is Miller.
At the beginning, like, there's a real obvious difference between some TV actors who are shooting in Canada and a movie star. Even though Tom Jane's a weirdo, like, he's got the thing to be on the screen.
He nailed it.
You know, Amos and Alex are two of my favorite characters. I think they're awesome on the TV show.
Those are the two best casts on the show.
Yeah. Ava Sarl is amazing on the TV show.
She's amazing in the book, too, though. So, like,
I say that because they're great characters, characters I love. Yeah. I actually started watching it again. I'm in the middle of the second season.
Jesus.
Well, I did this. I watched the first Game of Thrones series 6 times.
I don't know how you do that, man. Jeez.
Well, because I just watch TV and I put it on. I don't have to pay attention to it. In fact, it helps me focus so that I'm doing my work and not doing something else.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So a lot of stuff, I watched it right after I read the first book, and I was like, that's not right. And now that I watched it, I was like, I realized the TV show is ahead of the books, so they knew what was coming.
Yeah.
And so, like, they had Amos down from the beginning, where maybe in the books, like, maybe at the beginning of the first book, they didn't really have them fully established. Mm-hmm. So when they did the show, they knew what was going to be coming later, and therefore actors and the scripts could reflect that. So, you know, I don't think it came through in the book who Amos was really well for a little while. And then when you sort of understand what a unique person he is, that's all in the first couple episodes of the show, but I didn't realize that at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, the show is weird because it does sort of smush books together. It's not a straight...
Which it has to.
Yeah, of course. It's not a straight retelling, like, book one is season one, book two is season two. It's like, I think one is one, but then, like, two is like two and three.
Yes.
Something like that. And it's so it's a little... If you're a big book fan, it's a little disconcerting for a minute, but...
The third season, which is Abaddon's Gate, it's a very different story.
Yeah.
Same points, but it's very not bad. It's actually really interesting to be like, all right, how did you do it like this? Why did you do it like this? And you sort of think of it that way, you know. And I can say I like the books better, 100%. But you know, it's fun to watch.
I'll tell you who's casting. They nailed this drummer. She's great.
She was just in. I saw the Harrison Ford dog movie. Call of the Wild with the kids.
Oh, yeah, she's in that, right?
Yeah, but I was looking at her going, who the hell? Like, I couldn't place it because it's such a different setting.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's Drummer. She is great.
It's so bizarre to me, Ron, that for years you and I have had this thing, and now Josh has, like, become a super fan of it.
Well, there's really no... I mean, but that happened in comics all the time.
And I'm not complaining. I'm not just Josh just so alone. Funny. Yeah. It's just funny. Like, we've had this thing for so long, and now it's like... Cool. Now we got another guy who.
Welcome to the club. It's great.
Thank you. It is so much fun to sort of plow through that stuff. Like, I love reading books like that.
And they're long. They're like 500 plus page books.
Yeah, they're meaty.
Well, I was doing the audiobooks. The audiobooks are like 20 hours a piece or so. But I was at the library and I saw them. I was like, oh, those are big books.
Because
I never know how to, you know. The narrator on the audiobooks is fantastic, by the way.
Is listening to audiobooks really reading?
Yes, because it's basically listening. With my life, it's the only way that I can fit it in. You know, like, I mean, it's a similar experience, but all the things that are great about reading, which is where you're picturing stuff in your mind's eye, that doesn't take those up the way that, like, a TV or a movie does, and you still get that sort of long, in-depth experience. The fact is, like, I wouldn't be able to read as much without doing that. And also, I can be reading constantly. I'm, like, cooking. I'm doing the dishes. If I'm into it, like, I'm just mainlining that all the time. I don't know how to refer to it because I want to say I've been reading the book, but I don't want to be like I've been listening to the book. Neither of those seem right.
Do you listen to audiobooks, Ron?
No, I don't listen to audiobooks.
I don't either.
I don't have time.
I've been enjoying them more than podcasts because they're basically just longer form versions of that stuff.
Yeah, I just don't have enough time to listen. I mean, my commute is 50. I'm lucky to have a 15-minute commute. Yeah, so it's
My mind wanders.
You know, like I can't be working and doing it. I can be, you know, I walk the dog. I can ride my bike. It's things I don't have to think of, and I'm usually pretty focused. Occasionally, you will lose it, and I'll have to go back. I'll hear something, but like I missed something. I'll go back a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I can lock in the same way I would be listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
And also, you're invested because it's a story.
I'm reading the 8th book right now, and I'm reading for much longer at night than I normally do. Normally, I'll try to go to bed by a certain time, but I find myself finishing and looking at the clock, and it's like an hour past when I wanted to go.
Oh, yeah, it's like the first half of the Stevenson book.
Yeah.
Fall or Dodge in Hell. But the first half, man, couldn't get enough.
The last half was a slog.
So we wanted to talk about something to close the show out that we all three were into. And again, we talked about at the top of the show how strange for media it is right now, considering what's going on in the world. So we had all watched the McMillions documentary on HBO that just wrapped up a few weeks ago.
But we should give some background before we get into the show itself.
Many of you probably read the article that was on the Daily Beast.
It was the Daily Beast.
Yeah, the Daily Beast did an article that flew all over the internet that was about the McDonald's Monopoly game scam, that none of it was real, that it was all the big winners were fake, and it flew all over the internet, and everyone was crazy, and Ben Affleck optioned it for a film.
So this article came out on the Daily Beast, and I'll never forget it because I was flying home from somewhere, and I was sitting in the airport, and I just saw this, you know, McDonald's scam kind of thing, so I read it. It was a long article. I read the whole thing, and it was absolutely fascinating. I remember sharing it with you guys and going, you guys got to read this. Because basically what it was the McDonald's Monopoly game that we all grew up with in the late 80s, early 90s, where, you know, you got game pieces and you could win $1 million or win a car or whatever. Turns out there was a multi-year, 12-year scam going on, and it all fell apart and all got busted, and it all happened days before 9/11 on 2001.
No one knows about it because the news came out September 9th. As Ron said, everyone in America was probably aware of the game. It ran for years. And to find out that none of the major winners were real was a shocker. And to find out 20 years later was even crazier. And so a feature film was optioned by Ben Affleck's team that has gone nowhere.
Well, it's dead. It was a casualty of the Disney-Fox merger.
And so HBO ended up doing a documentary about it, a 6-part documentary called McMillions, in which they interviewed all the major players in it. And this was the kind of thing where I think we all sort of watched it. And then it was, are you watching this McMillions show? And then it became a thing where every week we would commiserate about it. I thought 6 episodes was a little long. It could have been 4 or 5.
That's my one complaint. So I enjoyed it. Having known the story, but not knowing any of the players, it was really interesting to see a lot of the people who were involved in it. They had there were 2 main FBI agents. One declined to participate. The other one, for obvious reasons, participated times 10.
Was thrilled to participate.
Yeah. They had the district attorney, Devereaux, who prosecuted it, who I was fascinated by that guy. I thought he was great.
They had the whole team of, they had the supervisor, they had all the guys.
But they had that one guy, Rick Dent, wouldn't
right, but they had everybody else. They had all
I love
else.
That.
Yeah. And then they had a bunch of people who were involved in it, the quote-unquote winners. They had the wives of some of the men who were orchestrating it. And it was just really fascinating to put names to faces and things like that. That said, I really enjoyed it. I would give it probably a B+. It was definitely enjoyable to watch. I do agree with you, Connor, that 6 was too long. If this was a tight 4-episode series, it would have been great. Because what happened was that for at least half the episodes, they were able to put out a question and spend the entire hour dancing around that question and then end on a cliffhanger, on a stinger that you didn't see coming or that blew your mind. And so when they did that, it worked. But right in the middle, they got lost in the details of some of the players' lives, and it really slowed down the pace, and it really slowed down the show. Like episode 4 and 5, there are times where I'm like, oh man, just get every time they left the FBI, I found myself being bored.
1, 2, and 3 were terrific. And then 4 and 5, it was once we delved into the lives of the mob guys, and I was like, well, I don't really care about this guy's club in Florida.
Some of that, though, I mean, those were some fascinating characters. They weren't Agent Matthews necessarily, but I mean, like, my favorite, I could have watched Frank Colombo, the mobster guy, his brother and his wife. I could have watched that all day. Because the thing about all of that is, why are you people talking?
Right.
I thought it every moment, especially like basically Frank Columbo. I can't remember his brother's name, but you know, like he's like the weird odd man out. He's the Fredo.
Jerry Columbo.
He's Fredo. Yeah. He clearly wanted to be involved in that stuff, was never involved, right, and therefore was always on the fringes of it.
And now he's like in his Florida home with his wife, you know, like, and they and sort of coffee. Speak together. Yeah. And it was,
and his kid works at McDonald's.
Came in. Like, it was all, there were so many things.
It was full of interesting characters. And because it was all centered around Florida, and it's almost,
yeah.
What I thought of, they never talked about in the show, was that McDonald's never caught on. And the only reason this all blew up because someone, you find out who through the course of the documentary, ratted to the FBI. I don't use ratted a pejorative, but they leaked to the FBI this was happening. But if not, it never would have come out. But you think that someone at McDonald's would have seen that all the winners were in Florida.
That's what everyone said.
By
was
the way, I called the informant.
Interesting.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Interesting.
Like 9 out of 10 of them are in Florida, and you think somebody in McDonald's headquarters would have gone, wait a minute.
The journalists, when they told the FBI story about the day before they're going to do the arrests, and they're faxing all the different agencies, and one report got sent to a newspaper by accident, and no one would take credit for it. It was very funny.
That was my favorite cut in the entire thing.
That was
I'm not
going to
say who. They cut. I'm not the one who did it. And then
the fact that journalist says, the journalist from South Carolina, who is like, how we didn't put it together, I don't understand. We wrote, we had four winners from our zip code, and we wrote articles about all of them. How did we not realize? Like, this whole thing was like, it was, the crime was just enough below the radar to not matter, because the contest happened once a year.
Well, it was smart enough and dumb enough.
Yes.
Because it was really smartly organized, but it was dumb in the execution, in that, again, all the winners were basically in the same geographical. Like, that was the weird thing about it. It was a very sophisticated crime, but they executed it in a really dumb manner. And it was just in that middle gray area where no one caught on to it.
Right.
They could have done it. It was a $12 million scam, I think they said at the end. It was like, the guy who ran it, he stole $12 million.
I was 24.
But he ended up with half, so he had
$12 million. Yeah, it was $24 million total. He owned Jerry Jacobson, the guy who stole all the pieces, owed $12 million in restitution, which he pays like $370 a month for the rest of his life.
Don't give him too much. I think the thing that – it's like you watch, you go, oh, right, criminals are stupid.
Yeah.
And then I think the thing that blew me away the most is like, these are not what I thought FBI people were like. I don't know why they were talking. I know why the one guy was talking, but everyone else,
Well, they were retired. The guy, the supervisor, Tim, or whoever it was, he was great. He was retired. Most of the people that were retired. Plus, it's a boon for the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
They get to talk about a successful investigation, and the FBI is not against publicizing itself.
No, that's true.
What was interesting is the whole last episode was all around the idea of who the informant was and who tipped it off. And they did a really good job of giving you a red herring by way of the IRS and really have you believing that's how it happened. But then our favorite agent, Agent Matthews from the FBI, points out, it's like, if the IRS was involved, they would have been right there with us announcing the bust, and they were nowhere to be seen, which is totally true, too.
We should mention Agent Doug Matthews is the star of the documentary. He is one of
he's the star of HBO right now.
He's the agent who saw the post-it note about McDonald's, ran with it, ended up blowing it all up. I loved his outside-the-box thinking, which always tended to work.
Yep.
I loved his gold suit.
He's a loudmouth, crazy person, but he had really good ideas, and he moved that case forward.
And he is imminently watchable. Even when he's just – and he was also really good on camera in terms of – he could break down really complicated investigatory ideas in a very simple and easy to understand way. He was actually really, he was very funny and entertaining, but he was also really good at being on camera and just talking to the camera. And he was, anytime he was on, it was terrific. When he was gone for a long time, it was not so great.
I love the whole, exactly. Every time they went away from the FBI, the show dragged. Enough with the mobster's wife. Like, she was,
ugh. Can't tell me that's not interesting.
What I found, it was for an episode. She got three episodes basically out of that.
Right, but like at the one part she's made up, and then the next part she just looks like she's fell off a truck.
They did that a lot. They did that with the mobster's brother too, where they did two interview sessions, and one is like really made up, looking nice, good setup and everything like that. And the other one is on a crappy couch and on a, you know, like more disheveled, more like natural. And I really wonder what the filmmaker, if that was just by byproduct of what, you know, the shoot, or if that was a creative choice.
Well, I think they were showing that none of these people were living extravagant. They were all kind of sad. Mm-hmm. Everyone involved in the scam were just kind of sad. There was no one. I mean, we never talked to the ringleader because he wouldn't talk to them for obvious reasons. But everyone else who was involved in the scam was just kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
And that was kind of shown in the way they did the interviews. Despite the part that it dragged in the middle, I thought it was incredibly fascinating. I loved all the characters. I loved the half-brother who became friends with the prosecutor. The guy who comes on towards the end, who with the mustache, who was like the career criminal who got involved.
Yep.
I thought they were all interesting.
AJ Plum.
That guy was fascinating. Yeah.
They were all interesting weirdos, and they were all, so they'd all do it again.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating look at crime, investigations, and the justice system, because at the end of the day, they all got very little time in prison. They all got arrested, and they all served like a year.
It was basically mail fraud, which the most was 3 years in prison, right?
Yeah, and I was discussing it afterwards with somebody. I was like, why wouldn't you do white-collar crime?
Right, like, yeah.
You steal $24 million, and you go to prison for 3 months, and you come out, and you have all the money because they can't find it? Like, why wouldn't you do white-collar crime? That was like the sort of
I would like anyone listening to notice that I am not associated with Connor Kilpatrick, that his opinions speak for himself.
But it explains why people keep doing it. It's not like, you know, crime with a gun. If you pull out a gun and rob $24 million, you'd go to jail for 25 years. But if you do it through a fraud, you go to jail for 4 months. It explains why it keeps happening. But it was, for all its faults, I thought it was a really fascinating and interesting documentary, and I thought the characters were delightful.
Yep. It was great. It was totally enjoyable. It was, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, complaining about the length of it and it meandering in episodes 4 and 5 still was riveted, still was watching, still wanted to know everything, wanted to know how it all wrapped up, how it all ended. It's just a great story, and it's kind of a bummer that the dramatized, you know, kind of movie version of it isn't going to get made. Maybe it will someday, but it's a kind of story that can only exist in that period of time, you know, and it's like in a moment, you know, or technology could lock that sort of thing down. I was fascinated by the McDonald's security people who had no idea. They completely outsourced this entire thing to a marketing company. They had no idea how it worked. They had no idea. Like, you talk about the millions of dollars being spent on it, and they were just like, yeah, we were shocked. And it's
who
like,
knew? They were running it for us. Yeah. Like, how you guys have any oversight over this?
I can believe that.
Yeah, for sure.
I totally can believe it.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
If you're a fan of documentaries, if you read that article and wanted to see more, this is a great documentary to track down. McMillions, 6 episodes. It's about 6 hours. Some of the episodes were longer than others, but you get about 6 hours of entertainment out of it. Again, if you're looking for time while you're home, working from home, quotes, this is a good one to do. This is a great one for the background, too, because it's not super visual. It's just a lot of talking heads for the most part. So you can have it in the background while you're working. But one of the better documentary series to come out in a while, I think.
The lady who worked for McDonald's, Amy.
Yep.
Is the most of indeterminate age person I've ever seen in my life.
You're really hung up on that.
It was just I couldn't figure it out. Like, she had the neck of a 90-year-old woman and then the face of a 35-year-old. Like, it was just, she was all over. It was very, I was like, oh, is she retired?
She might have had a little crush on Agent Matthews. You notice that at the end? She was like, I never got a letter from Agent Matthews.
I mean, who could you blame her?
No. He's delightful. All right, so this has been the first episode of iFanboy Media Explode, our non-comics media show that we're going to do once a month should the patrons knock us back over the stretch goal. And so if you want to hear more of this, you want to hear us talk about non-comic stuff, if you want to hear the promised, almost famous debate, that'll come if you go to patreon.com/iFanboy and support us there, get us over that stretch goal permanently, and then you'll get this show permanently, much like you've gotten the Book Explode show and the Talksplode show, both unlocked by the patrons, and those are shows we've been doing for years now because of the patrons, because we have the stretch goal. So if you want to hit this stretch goal, patreon.com/iFanboy. And Josh and I are looking forward to that debate. We just didn't want to do it for this show, which was going to be possibly the only show you got. Anyway, but we look forward to it. We're looking forward to the Almost Famous debate in which Josh hates the movie, and I love it.
Unbelievable.
That is so incorrect.
So if you want more of this, you know where to go. In the meantime, you know that you can find our regular shows over at iFanboy.com, our weekly Pick of the Week show, our Book Explodes, our Talk Explodes, our special edition shows in which we review movies and things. our animated shows, our reviewing of animated shows, not actual animated shows. It's all at fanboy.com. Anything else, guys?
I think that's it. Yeah.
This was fun.
Thank you to the patrons. Please, I would like to come back and podcast with these guys on a regular basis. So
that would
let's make that happen.
That's what that would mean.
That's true. Yeah. Ron can come and talk about non-comic stuff with us. No problem. And as we said at the top of the show, our yearly all-media year-end show is always our most popular show of the year. Here's a little behind the curtains. If you look at downloads, it's our most popular show of the year. So if you want to get a little bit of that every month, you know where to go. You know where to check out. So thanks to everyone who listened. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Josh.
We're off. We're way off.
Josh, you're normally last.
You're always
right?
Last, Josh.
You're always
last. No, but like it's different now. He's not. He's like a guest. I'm like, well, am I supposed to
I'm not a guest. I'm not a guest. I'm a host on this one. It.
Listen, Listen.
I was deferring. I was respecting you by letting you go last.
All right.
Fine.
All right. So maybe we'll see you next month.
I'm Josh.
Until then, I'm Ron.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.